Secondary Education Complaints Committee, again at 1 p.m. So the Complaint Committee, upon a majority vote of quorum of the members, may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The Complaint Committee, upon a majority vote of quorum of the members, may also go into executive session to discuss and consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by the state or federal law pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2. Since this meeting is being recorded, I will ask Complaint Committee members and staff to introduce themselves for the record. Again, this is Michael Romano, board member and chair of the Complaints Committee.
Glenn Tharp, board member and member of the Complaint Committee.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, board member and member of the Complaint Committee.
This is Kevin Lamountain, executive director for the board.
Keith Blanchard, board staff.
Terry Stanfill, board staff.
Sorry, Terry, I'm cutting you off there. And Rachel.
Go ahead.
This is Seamus Monahan, Assistant Attorney General. Sorry about that, guys.
And Rachel, you're up.
I thought I said it. Rachel Pierce, board staff.
Yeah, it's hard to hear you, Rachel. That's why. So we didn't.
No worries. No worries. Okay. So a couple other things here. As the Complaint Committee members are also, as we go through any voting or motioning, please make sure to state your name as we're doing this virtual. In regards to item number two on the agenda for the Complaint Committee, Mr. Lamountain, have you confirmed that the minutes of the June 26, 2020 meeting are posted, audible, and reflect the official record of the meeting?
Mr. Chair, I have completed that, and I have listed it as it is audible.
Tremendous.
Based on that, I would make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Awesome. Do I have a second?
Can I second if I wasn't there?
I will go ahead and second as the chair, since make that, but you can. So why don't we take roll?
Hey, Mr. Romano, I think we lost Glenn or Mr. Tharp.
Come on, we're like 3 minutes into this. There he is.
He was the first one on.
All right. Well, Ms. Kirsch, would you be kind enough to take roll call for the vote?
Of course. And now I just drew a blank. Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote, please.
Oh, Glenn Tharp, aye.
And Dr. Jennifer Leck, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye. So for the record, it carries, motion and minutes are accepted. All right. Let's see if I can now switch over to my other screen. Mr. Lamountain, you mentioned that we were going to have a change to the agenda, moving up item number four to the next item, which was a non-student complaint with AZ Brow Academy. Is that correct? You're on mute, Mr. Lamountain.
That is correct. And Mr. Blanchard will be providing the statements for each of the three complaints.
Tremendous. Mr. Blanchard, would you be kind enough to give us some background on this particular issue?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee. During a board review of the website for AZ Brow Academy, it was determined that the institution was using three statements that were previously instructed by the board during licensure that they weren't supposed to be using. One is the puffery on the front page regarding America's number one microblading academy. On page two, the use of certified microblading artists making $100 to $300 per hour, but there's no information regarding where that amount came from. And of course, using the word certified in a program that there's no certification agency is prohibited. And then on page eight, statement of microblade artists are earning $299 to $599 per hour procedure, but they don't have any of the information of where that came from. There's no actually response information. I was told in an email about a week ago that they're going to remove that, which is the same thing that happened back in 2018. I've attached that report for your review and also the prior web information. And here to answer any of your questions is Francisco. I always mess up your last name, so I'm just going to say Francisco.
It's Ahumada.
Ahumada. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Ahumada, would you please, we welcome you. You can obviously, you've announced yourself already, but if you would maybe speak to the concerns that have been brought forward and help us understand why after past direction, the AZ Brow had decided to reincorporate this information in regards to salary and then certification.
So first, you know, we have removed everything again, because I know that me, myself, as the owner and my wife, we are aware that this is not something that we should have on the websites, like we've been told before, and we had taken it off. And really what it just came down to was the marketing guy that we have. Like, I am no longer, like, I don't run any of the SEO or any of the things that we do on Google anymore or on our website. We've hired on a marketing guy that I believe we hired him in 2018 when we first told him to take that stuff off. And it was just something that I think a few years went by, and he's always just redoing. So the word like certified and the word certified training, it was a Google ad that he put out. It was a like pay-per-click ad, which he changes all the time. And I honestly just think that he put it on there to make it sound good. And he completely forgot about the fact that we're not supposed to be saying that. Which this, you know, right when we were told that it was back up there, we searched the entire website, we looked, made sure everything, and we found out that it was on a Google ad that said, get certified today, which we immediately told him, take all of that stuff down. We're not supposed to have that on here. And I think that, you know, every year or anytime new software, pretty much the way he explains it to me, comes up and how we build the websites, he's pretty much redoing the website as much as he can to keep it up to date and working with SEO. And he just happened to completely forget, but we made it very clear that this is never to be put back on there again. And in regards to the, how much a potential client can make, I personally didn't see what it was. I believe it's all taken down now, but I didn't see exactly what it was, but I knew I've seen it before, so I know what you're talking about. And honestly, the projection of, is it more so the problem that you can't have that on there without proof of this?
Yeah, because you have to footnote it or cite some site like BLM, some independent site. You just can't put it out there.
What if this is like based off of our personal financial record? Like, this is what we've been able to do. Is this not?
No,
that would not be acceptable.
Yeah, okay. It's not acceptable.
Because really, that's, you know, I which I completely understand. We took it off, and it won't be put back on there again. So it has to be like a different organization saying this and this, which they've collected data and pretty much put out to be true for it to be acceptable.
Yeah, because what's going to happen is you're going to have a student who graduates and doesn't make that, and then they're going to be in front of us saying, look, I have written documentation from the school that I'm going to make this much, and I'm not.
Right. And just to be clear, it was potential earnings was what it was. But I understand what you mean, and that's the last thing that we need is to guide our students in there for that reason if it's not going to happen for everybody. So it was taken down, we made it very clear with our marketing guy to never put those words in and to make sure that that wasn't on there. So one thing, are we allowed to put things on there in regards to like AZ Brow? So my wife and her girls have won the Arizona Foothills Mr. Best Valley.
Amata, can I pause you here?
Yeah.
Our role as the board is not to guide you on what you can or cannot do and talk through those elements. That's your responsibility as the owner and operator of the school to be familiar with the statutes that you have agreed to based on the licensure that you have pursued. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time this has come up, and I want to be direct, although you have a marketing web person under your employment who makes these updates, ultimately you and the school are responsible for adhering to that. And it's disappointing to hear that your marketing person was able to make these types of updates to your school and advertising without your knowledge. Would you explain to us what your process is in regards to reviewing materials before they are made public and how that's overseen by the school?
As far as materials, like you mean like the Google ads and pay-per-click ads that he puts out?
Everything that represents the school publicly.
Everything besides like the Google ads we are aware of. I mean, he makes changes to the website for, you know, SEO purposes, but we definitely did not ask him to put these things back in. And that is, again, nobody is at fault besides my wife and I, because we, like, it's our school and we need to make sure that everything that's put out there about our school and in regards to our training program is gone through us first, and we have okayed it for this purpose. And that was just honestly a comfort thing that we got. We've been with him for a while, and we thought that we've addressed it once, and it was understood. And I think it just slipped on. He might have completely forgot that this is not allowed, and he might have thought 2 years down the road, oh, why don't we do this? It sounds so much better, and completely forgot that this was not okay. And he made the changes without our knowledge, and that's still on us, because, you know, I gave him the kind of the, that's what he does. You know, he's a professional in SEO, and I kind of gave him the okay to manage our SEO.
Okay. So, my hope would be, as we progress here, you'll understand, by not having those procedures in place for review, you're exposing yourself to these types of situations. And this one specifically is really one that concerns us at a high level because of how it can misrepresent to the consumer in the marketplace in regards to how much they can be earning, the fact that they're being certified when in reality there's no certification, true certification that comes with those pieces of it. So it's misrepresentation at the highest level, which again is consistent with what we specifically spoke to in 2018. But my concern is that message was not understood at that time clear enough to avoid this from reoccurring, obviously, here in the present day. But in addition to that, I'm not sure I have a high level of confidence as we move forward that you're really putting anything into place to prevent this from happening. But I'll open up to the other board members to see what type of questions they might have.
Well, this is Mr. Chairman. This is Member Tharp. You covered most of my questions. I mean, it's a pretty clear cut case of, you know, puffery at its finest and, you know, misrepresentation. I would just echo that what the chair said, that it gives me great concern about the administration of your school. I distinctly remember when you guys received approval, I distinctly remember discussing this with you guys. And I understand that you might have a rogue marketing guy, but to Mr. Romano's point, I just need to drive home that is you guys' responsibility as owners. I don't own the school I run, but I have to approve every piece of marketing that goes out from there before it's put up and such. So you got to do it, especially in this day and age where everybody's looking for career schools or for-profit schools to do the wrong thing. You know?
I 100% understand your guys'.
So, yeah.
And I can guarantee you that this will never be brought up again. And it will, you guys will never have this issue come up from us ever again.
Okay. I don't really have any further questions. You know, it's all here in black and white, not color.
Dr. Luck, any additional questions?
Nope. I think you guys have covered it very thoroughly.
Okay. So we have a decision to make in regards to, one, do we want to consider sending a letter of concern out to the school or advance this to the main board for consideration of penalties based on this repeat situation. So I will open it up to my fellow board members if you would like to make a motion in one direction or another. If not, I will be happy to make a motion.
Yeah, this is Board Member Tharp. I've struggled because with this one, because I don't know that I feel a letter of concern is sufficient enough after knowing that they were guided not to do stuff like this, and this is so prevalent, or was so prevalent in our so I'm certainly willing to make a motion to kick it up to the board, but I'm willing to listen, you know, Mr. Chair and member Dr. Lack, you know, if you have dissenting opinions about that.
I think I'm equally torn on it because they were told not to. My only part about this is that that was their first time being approved by the board. And so this is essentially their first come before the complaint committee that I'm aware of. And so I can see where, you know, obviously issuing a letter of concern would be the least that would happen, but it'd be their one opportunity.
Makes sense.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Board members, if I could jump in real quick, you know, if you are considering a letter of concern, I wanted to remind you as well that if this does ever happen again, that letter of concern can be used to immediately move this case forward to a disciplinary action.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, yes. Attorney General.
In that case, Mr. Romano, I'd make a motion that we issue a letter of concern to the Arizona Brow Academy for the unsubstantiated and puffery and unsubstantiated claims in their marketing materials.
I second.
All right. Ms. Kirst, would you take roll call?
Mr. Mike Romano, your vote, please.
Mike Romano, aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Tharp?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Amara, please recognize you will be receiving that from the staff here. Please take very seriously what the Assistant Attorney General has shared as well. That if we do have a repeat of this, and we are going to take in good faith your commitment that this will never occur again. But if this does, or similar situations of this nature, we will advance this immediately to the board for disciplinary action.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, we will move back onto our agenda of student complaints with that of the Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. Mr. Blanchard, would you be kind enough to give us an update?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee. On December 21st, 2020, State Board staff received a complaint from AW. She alleges in her complaint that she was verbally told by an admission director and recruiter that ASOM offered the California Herbs course, which is a requirement to sit for the California Acupuncture Board examination and licensure. Documentation submitted by Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine stated that she was told in reference to that part of the program did not allow her to sit for the exam. As part of the response and what board staff did during the investigation and review, I submitted the information from the accreditor, and what they show Part of the website for Arizona School of Acupuncture was attached. Part of the catalog specific to these issues was attached. As stated in the report, there is no signed enrollment agreement. I submitted a copy of the current enrollment agreement in case you wanted to review that. And I'm sure the institution will explain why they have been able to submit the enrollment agreement. Here to answer your questions for the institution is Joshua Hannum, and AW, I believe, is on the phone.
Okay. Mr. Blanchard, I'd like to start first because this is unique in the fact that the school was unable to provide a signed enrollment agreement with the students. So technically, we have no proof that there's even a contract between the school and the student, which really concerns me because the school has collected federal funding without a signed enrollment agreement. And so I just wanted to verify that.
Yes, I spoke with Joshua. He gave me the, there's a list of the cohort that I submitted to you, where all the other students in the cohort has submitted. During COVID, they went online for the submission of enrollment agreements and information in the program. And Joshua, if I'm speaking out of turn here, feel free to interrupt me.
No, you're fine, Chief.
At which time they received everybody's information except for the complainant's enrollment agreement. There's some emails and communication to have her do that, but it never was submitted. And that's my understanding from the institution.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Blanchard, you know, I echo, and it's funny, me and Mr. Romano on the same thing, because I echo the same thing. And maybe this is a question for our AG Seamus Monahan. I mean, they as I see it, don't have a contract, and so they have no right to, no claim to keep any money if it wasn't signed. Even if you do it virtually, you can have legal digital signatures, but even that has not been produced. Mr. Monahan, am I correct in my thinking?
Is that a question for me, Mr. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. You know, as far as the contract goes, without, you know, being able to see it, I couldn't tell you that.
Well, there is one. She didn't sign one.
At the same time, we have a student who attended classes and paid money, so we did have, you know, both sides had performed on the contract, even though there was no signed contract. So, you know, if you would like, we can continue this matter and you could give me time to look into the fact that there wasn't an enrollment agreement and now how that affects the way we analyze this issue. But if that's your hang up on the contract, I would request that you continue the matter, so that I could look into it. If it's not, then I would suggest, you know, you go forward with your questioning and determine and figure out whether you can determine what kind of action you want to take here.
So why don't we take a moment and hear from the school, Mr. Hannum. Maybe you could walk us through, if you do or do not have a signed copy of an enrollment agreement, electronically or not, with this particular student? And if not, how that did occur?
Yes, sir. During COVID, this was, I believe, the first cohort we had to bring on, also through necessity, just to keep everything moving at the school. We moved quickly into online distance education. It's been a very successful process for us. Orientation was a very successful orientation. We moved it into an online platform. We used our student management system, which documents a good majority of everything we have here outside of hard copy. So it's generally, we have document redundancy in there. What we have for the particular student, AW, is her presence in the orientation, which is an entire day of going over I don't know, 25 different files you need to go over and being hammered into you, please get these in, please get these in, get these in at your earliest convenience. We have, so orientation for us historically is, it's done, those documents are all completed, signed, handed in the day of, witness signatures, everything on them, they go right into a student file. With this particular situation, because we were online, we had to have some leniency, and everybody had a different situation. Some got it to us day of, some got it to us a couple days later, some we had to chase a little bit, but everybody got it to us, except for this particular student. We have the student documented in the orientation. We have the student completing financial aid. The documentation in the orientation, but this particular document never came in. Interestingly enough, we also have a transfer credit evaluation document. That's the document that once the student was at the school, that's the document that basically our academic dean goes through transfer evaluation. If the student's able to get some credit for classes, the credit is applied to those classes, and student needs to sign that document. Academic dean signs that document. We have a couple of emails going back and forth requesting signature on that document with the transfer eval completed. And the last response we have from the particular student regarding the transfer eval is, thank you. I don't see where I don't understand where I'm supposed to sign. It's a very, very clear document with simple, it says student name and date right next to academic dean name and date, and the academic dean signatures on it. That's another one that never came in. So
Mr.
we created a lot of space for the students in the situation to let them deal with what was happening in a home life, making sure things were coming in, following up. Hey, can you get this into us? If we by chance saw them, could you get this into us? Because we had school closures, that sort of thing that we were dealing with as well. And we don't have we never received the document. We don't have it on file. Every other student in the cohort documents are on file.
Mr. Hannum, I'm not familiar with the requirements for the Accreditation Commission for the Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. I do know with certain accreditation commissions, you can't start a student without a fully executed enrollment agreement. Do you know if that's the case for your accreditation?
I'm not positive. I would need to look specifically at it.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question for Mr. Hannum. Did you draw Title IV on this student?
In what manner?
Did you draw down Title IV? Did you?
Yeah, correct? It's listed in the packet that they did.
Right. So you do know the Department of Education rules in terms of a legitimate signed contract and any of the type of the audit through financial aid. You are aware that that is in violation if you collect Title IV funding against a student who has not completed a contract.
Yeah, actually, prior to this meeting, we've actually been discussing it as administration and addressing it specifically ourselves with financial aid and refunding that, refunding the portion of tuition we received through the Department of Education, which is also what we sought as a resolution with the student in the beginning regarding the situation. But we've approached it as administration as well when Keith, to be completely candid, it was something that the absence of the enrollment agreement was something that with everything else we've worked through here at the school, we had lost sight of in the student file when Keith had, or when Mr. Blanchard, pardon me, had asked me for it, and we went to provide it, and it came up, all the the pieces of that part came back up. Also partly because once we entered the tolling agreement with the student and representation on the claim, we never heard back again. So this has been a very silent situation for us for many, many, many months. But having the enrollment agreement brought back to light as administration, we've already begun to pull it into management meetings and address the fact that we need to address it with Department of Education.
I know the student is on the phone as well, AW. Respectfully, AW, we will need to continue this because without a signed enrollment agreement, we're just unsure of how this board may or may not take action. It is very concerning, and as you've heard the Assistant Attorney General mention, it's something that we'll need to look into. So unless there are other questions by the board members, I would make a motion to continue this to the next Complaints Committee.
I second.
This is AW. May I make one statement?
Because you've joined the call, AW, yes, we want to be respectful of that, so please.
Sure. As far as what they said in regards to the contract, they switched the day of orientation to when I was moving, and they said it was okay if I missed part of it. So I missed most of orientation because I was in the process of moving across state lines to go to the school. And I don't have access any longer to the university email, so I can't look back to tell you when things were sent. But if I remember correctly, many of the documents that we needed weren't sent out to us for months after we started school. And I wish I could pull up everything I had from them, but they've, of course, locked me out of the email I had with them.
We appreciate that additional information. We also appreciate your taking time to attend, both you and the school today. We're not trying to extend this out by any means. We just need to understand, based on not having a signed enrollment agreement, what we have the capability of doing. So at this point, we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded by Dr. Leck. And so I would ask Ms. Kuras, if you could take roll. And we will move forward.
Dr. Leck?
I didn't hear who you said.
Dr. Leck, your vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Romano, your vote?
Mike Romano, aye. So we will move to continue this. Again, Mr. Hannum, we appreciate your attendance as well. We know the board staff will circle back around with you post Assistant Attorney General's review to determine how we might best proceed. We would highly encourage the school to again review your records to determine if you have or have not in your records a signed enrollment agreement. And it would be an expectation, just for clarity, that although you are discussing it as a management team, you have recognized at this point you have drawn down Title IV funds. So you, the expectation is that you would take immediate action with the Department of Ed to resolve that matter. And there may be requirements by our board staff as well in notification of the Department of Ed as well. But I will leave that to the board staff to determine that.
Yes, sir, right. Mr. Romano, thank you.
Thank you. We will move on to item number three let me jump back real quick. Get us back to the second item under student complaints with the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences. Mr. Blanchard, would you please be kind enough to give us an update?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee. On September 21st, 2020, Complainant DT submitted a complaint alleging that he was withdrawn from Conservatory of Recording and Arts and Science because of COVID-19 procedures implemented by the institution affected his health. He had issue with breathing with the mask on. He went through the grievance process. The institution came up with what they thought was a fair resolution just based on the circumstances of the CDC requirements and also mandated by the governor. Institution submitted a response. That information is included regarding each of the allegations in the complaint by DT. Staff doesn't believe this is an ADA issue. There was nothing that was submitted to the institution during enrollment. It's specific to the COVID requirement from what was happening at the time. Institution did offer a refund. The student wanted up to $9,500. I believe the institution was retaining $4,700. But here to answer any of your questions is Mr. Hamm from the institution, and DT, I think, is on the phone.
Sorry. Before we jump into it, I just want to give a quick reminder. We always refer to the students by their initials for anonymity. So please, as referring to any of the students, or in this case, the student, please continue to use DT as the initials. Normally, we would start with the student here first, and I'd like to just say a couple other things. For the benefit of the student in the school, we have received a pretty extensive file on this that we've had, as board members, the opportunity to review. So as we offer you an opportunity to make kind of that opening statement, please understand and don't feel compelled to rehash all the things that have led up to this. Mr. Blanchard and the staff have done a great job of being very comprehensive in that information. But more so, try and refine your points to what seems relevant that might be in addition to what has already been provided or stated. And so in addition to that, I want to remind both the student and the school that we are here as the board to serve in the capacity of reviewing, did the school follow their procedures as outlined or not? Not necessarily to determine, do we agree with the school's decisions on on the actions that they have taken. Sometimes that can be a little confusing for both students and the school. We are really here to evaluate, were policies and procedures followed or not? So with that, student DT, are you on the line?
Yes.
Very good. Student DT, would you be so kind as to, if you would like to make an opening statement, and then our board may have some additional questions for you.
Sure. My intentions of attending this school was to obtain an audio engineering degree. I am an audio engineer, but I have no credentials. And I had met some people who said that there was a pretty good school. And so in July, I enrolled in the program, secured housing, moved out there, set up household, and began attending classes on 10/18 of 2019. Basically, 10/19 was the orientation where the student catalog handbook was extensively gone through as we sat pretty much all day listening to lectures as we received our gear that we were going to be using in classes. Throughout the entire process, I didn't see anything in there that really made me go, ooh, this is kind of questionable. I felt pretty secure in that I would be continuing all the way through the program to its end. About a month after classes began, well, I guess a little later than that, after Thanksgiving, one of our students came back from his visit home and he was sick. And nobody knew what it was, but he was complaining about it was hurting to breathe. And he sat right next to me, you know, every day in class. And in December, I'm sick, as well as everybody else in the class. And we all had this little strange, unusual thing that nobody knew what it was, but treated it with over-the-counter medications. And by the end of December, we were all better, save the one student who brought it into the classroom. So news comes out, in January about New York and, you know, all the people dying from COVID-19. And I discussed it with one of my doctors. I said, I had all these symptoms. Do you think this was it? He said, yeah, probably. And I said, well, do you want to test me? He says, no, it probably wouldn't work. So I had no way of proving it at that point. But the assumption at that time by my doctor there in Arizona was that I had got COVID-19 in school. So we went ahead and kept going. We had mandatory attendance, you know, and if you missed a day, it looked bad on your getting a an appointment in your internship. And they drove home several points in the orientation besides what was in the catalog. One of them was that you needed to be there every day and you needed to be on campus as much as possible because that furthered your ability to succeed in this industry. Audio engineering is very hands-on and it's very much you need your ears, teaching your ears to listen and recognize frequencies, blending them, panning them around the room, trying to create a soundscape. And so much exposure as you can get is a very good thing. And that's what they recommended at orientation through several lecturers. You needed to be up there on the campus. Well, when the governor did that little shutdown, essentially what happened was we were still in business. It was a school shutdown, if I remember right, on the 15th of March. But before that, there was some other type of a two-week deal. I can't remember the dates exactly. But we shut down basically what was the second week of my seventh cycle. The cycle is 3 weeks of class, and they have 12 of these. So I just completed the halfway point and got into the first week of my seventh cycle when we shut the school down. We were told 2 weeks and then we'll see what happens. We'll reassess.
Student DT, I appreciate this. You're really kind of going chronologically through the reports mm-hmm. that we've already had. And I want to be respectful with your time as well. Is there anything additional beyond the information that was already supplied to us that you would bring forward at this time?
Well, basically regarding the ADA compliance, if I'd have known I had to wear a mask to go back in the building when I signed the paperwork to attend the school, if that was even a possibility or consideration that was down the line, I wouldn't have attended. Okay? I told them I had had a stroke. I told them I had lung damage when I signed up. Okay. So now there was no proper paperwork because I've learned to live with my condition as is. Put a mask on me, the condition changes to hypoxia, which damages organs, damages your brain. It does damage to your body. Now, the governor issued his decree that people with respiratory disorders were not going to be required to wear a mask in the state of Arizona. The CDC said the exact same thing. But the school, when I came back into the school, you were going to be required to wear a mask to be inside the building. So I had 3 days notice to a change of how my health care was going to be addressed. Secondly, the program changed. You went from having 4 hours of active physical time in classroom with 12 people down to 6 people, and you're there for 2 hours and you're Zooming for 2 hours. But it's kind of hard to do audio over a computer through headphones because you're listening to everything at plus 6 decibels. So you're not getting all the nuance of sound that we're supposed to be there learning to do. So the program changed there. The program changed with requiring my mask and not being allowed to even have any recourse with the ADA consideration. Everybody in my class, I was around all the time without masks. We were all sick together. We're like a family unit. So me attending a classroom, the teacher might have been the only person there who would have been, you know, at risk. But, you know, I know several of the teachers that had it and got over it too. So, but social distancing could have been an option. Wearing a mask in the halls could have been an option. You know, wearing a face shield, something. There could have been an option discussed here, but there wasn't. It was just like, I made the statement, I cannot wear a mask. And they're like, okay, that's nice. You know, here's this paperwork. If you're going to leave, you got to sign this piece of paper. And it's your, you know, voluntary withdrawal.
Student DT,
this
is Dr. Leck. I have a couple questions because I'm seeing that we're going in a pattern, but there's two things that kind of stand out to me. Number one, it sounds like that you expected the institution to anticipate the pandemic. And as you know, everyone had to pivot and react differently to that. And it was, it's not, I can't even say every institution in the entire United States had to adjust for the health of this, their student bodies. And so I guess one of the things I'm not understanding is how you would have that expectation for the school. And the second thing that I don't understand is, if it doesn't sound like you ever produced documentation to the school regarding anything of your medical. So while I can appreciate where you're coming from, it's kind of, you know, word of mouth, if you will, right? You're making statements, but there you didn't self-select in to show that documentation. Is that correct?
My doctors were in Dallas, Texas. Okay. The people out there that I dealt with did not deal with my lungs. My pulmonologist that I had been going to in Dallas, Texas, retired while I was in Arizona. So I had to go through the orientation of trying to find a new pulmonologist, you know, and so I did not even see a doctor or get an appointment to see a doctor until November of 2020. And then they canceled on me because of all the problems with COVID. So I still have yet to be able to get in to see my pulmonologist. But I did a test. I found out I did have a fungal infection in my sinuses that would basically trigger my asthma through having a mask on. But as far as the pandemic, there was a pandemic in 2009 all the way through 2015 of H1N1. 130,000 people died every year through that period. Some more, some less. But in that general vicinity, it was over 100,000 people. And most of them were young people. And that is not the case here with COVID. It is not targeting younger people. But let's say you let them all wear a mask so they're safe. And I don't wear a mask. Are they not protected by their mask and social distancing?
Student DT, I respectfully, H1N1 did not result in the governor, as well as our president at the time, taking action to the extent that we were required to as institutions during this pandemic. So to Dr. Leck's point, it sounds like you did bring forward the concern to the school in regards to the breathing issue, but at the same time, unable to provide any appropriate documentation, not at fault of yourself, just being very, very open around the fact of the school did not receive any actual documentation supporting what I'm sure we can all consider to be a very legitimate concern on your part of where you were at with your respiratory difficulties. Is that a factual statement?
I was unable to provide them with a piece of documentation backing up my claims. But on the other side of the coin, I can walk into any medical office and fill out a form and state that I have asthma, and that attending physician will take my word that I have asthma. You can listen to me talk until I'm short of breath. When I enrolled in class, I told the lady that I had a stroke in 2004. I had lung damage from it in 2004, and I had asthma on top of that. I didn't fill out a piece of paperwork on it, but it was notice given.
I appreciate that. At the same time, institutions have been held accountable for trying to make medical analysis when they don't carry the background or degrees to determine a medical analysis. So we have to be respectful on both sides that we can't ask institutions who don't carry those medical type of backgrounds to make those types of diagnosis. Thus why we have a process and procedure that the school is required to follow to request that information for review and evaluation, and based on that, make a determination on next steps. And it sounds like, at least for this portion, the school did not receive that documentation to be able to follow their procedures in regards to ADA evaluation.
Their procedures require 45 days prior to the admission date to have the ADA stuff be implemented. I was given 3 days notice that I would be required to wear a mask. How does that comply with the regulations? They changed the name because of the COVID issue, and I get stuck with something that should have happened before I ever signed up. That was not an issue until it became an issue.
Yes, I think that's the opportunity between the school and the student to try and work through that. And it seems as though the school was trying to work through to get that documentation by putting you on a leave of absence during that period of time until the issue could be resolved.
To what end? To what end? I mean, I was basically here. You've put your life on hold for 6 months to come out here and go to school. But now we got to wait till you can get this documentation. So what, I stay out there in a place and do nothing for however much time it takes for me to get this documentation. And then they get it. And what? They go, oh, okay, you cannot wear a mask, or you still have to wear a mask, or what? Because the rules that they implemented stated clearly that to be in the building on the campus, you had to be wearing a mask at all times. But when I returned my gear the Friday after my withdrawal, JR met me at the door with no mask on. So
again, the school did not receive the documentation, so I don't want to speculate on what the school may or may not have done if they did receive that information. That's what we're trying to assess again, did the school follow their policy, and the request was made for documentation to determine if an evaluation or an adjustment could be made or accommodation, but that information was not provided. So although we can speculate, the school ultimately did not have the opportunity to review that information. They did follow their procedure in regards to putting you on an LOA to try and create time for that, knowing that they don't control doctor office visits. They didn't control the pandemic. They are required by the mandate by the governor to follow those practices and procedures. And ultimately, it seems from our review, you know, or the information that was provided, they tried to live within that, which ultimately resulted in a withdrawal that calculations were determined around the debt process as well, which it seems as though the institution was trying to find some balance with you as well of based on what you had taken up to a certain point, but then ultimately, when the pandemic occurred, trying to find some balance there as well.
Well, you do understand that initially they tried to bill me for the third quarter tuition for 5 days attendance in that quarter. And the only reason I got that back was because I raised a stink about it. But the response I got was, well, you signed the contract, and under the contract, you're obligated to pay for this. So they were going to bill me another $4,500 or $4,700 for something I hadn't even set foot in the door for.
And so certainly there was liberties that were provided to institutions in regards to the ability to deliver education. And from what information was provided, it does look as though they were within their rights of the contract. Not that we would expect you to agree with that, but at this point, again, it goes back to us validating the school followed procedure, their procedures.
I have a question. At what point did that contract remain valid? How long was that contract valid? Because they've made changes continually through COVID. I understand that, but it's not what I signed up for. Okay.
Agreed. And I think the institution.
You know, so that's the 10 week shutdown. You know, they could have told me 10 weeks prior that we're going to require masks when we open up. You know, and I wouldn't have stayed there an extra 2 months, but I had to find out.
Student DT, like as Dr. Leck had shared, obviously the entire country, really the entire world, was going through adjustments during that period to determine that. And during that time, as it progressed, again, you identified concerns that you brought forward to the institution. The institution awarded an LOA to allow you to work through that. They worked to the letter of the contract, whether agreed or not, legally, they followed their contract. And then the school came back to adjust that, recognizing the significance of the pandemic. And I believe in addition to that, from the materials that I reviewed, have also submitted for forgiveness around any debt associated with that as well.
So they keep the money and the taxpayers pay for it. Is that what I'm hearing? The forgiveness, debt forgiveness?
The debt forgiveness is in direction to you, yes.
Yeah, but it's basically they keep the money, the taxpayers pay off the loan for me, and they get stuck with the tab.
No. So again, within the current regulations and what the school is afforded the opportunity to have, that is correct, but again, not outside of the policies and procedures that have been identified even by our government here.
Well, how long, like I said, again, when did that contract cease to be the contract that I signed?
Excuse me, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan.
That was no longer the same.
Excuse me, DT. Excuse me, DT. This is not relevant information to this matter, and it's not something that the board can speak to as they're not a party to that contract. So I would advise that we move off of this subject.
Thank you, Assistant Attorney General. I appreciate that. I do not at this time have any additional questions for the student DT. Fellow board members, any additional questions before we invite forward the institution?
No.
Okay.
No, not for me. No.
All right. Thank you. Student DT, just as a reminder, out of respect, there may be moments as we're conversing with the institution, we would ask that you do not interrupt or engage from that. This is our opportunity to have some dialogue with the institution. So please respect those wishes.
I'm putting that phone for you.
And with that, I would like to ask Mr. Hamm, as representative of the institution, if you would like to come forward again, make that opening statement, understanding we do have quite a comprehensive file on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and esteemed committee members. Excuse me. First and foremost, you know, our heart goes out to DT in the fact that we pride ourselves on taking care of our students. And this marks my 30th year as administrator of the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences and 40 years in the private post-secondary industry. I got involved with the industry because I enjoy helping students achieve their goals, their dreams, and that first and foremost has always been our mantra. Unfortunately, with this student situation, we were faced with a global pandemic, and we're dealing with it based on the guidance we were receiving from the governor's office and the federal CDC. We followed the CDC requirements to the best of our abilities. All the time, our focus and our goal was to keep our students, staff, and faculty safe. In all of the mandates and recommendations and requirements, mask wearing and the other protocols were instituted at the conservatory when we could resume classes based on the governor lifting the closure. We were very disappointed that DT could not continue based on the mask situation. The last thing we wanted was to put him in harm's way with his age and any respiratory issues that he had, that he would be a high-risk individual. That's the last thing I could do, is put him in harm's way, as well as look to spread COVID amongst my instructors and staff. After the fact, we were given an email response that we were a good school, and that he wanted a resolution of basically a reduction of his tuition and charges. So we moved his last date of attendance to December 20th of 2019 and did the pro rata refund calculation based on that prior to school shutdown, prior to COVID even being identified in the United States. And we thought we were meeting his recommendation and providing a solution to the challenge that he had. And then ultimately, here we are now with the complaint before the committee. And so I just, again, it is a difficult time. We looked to do the best we could for all the students and the staff and faculty and the school itself. And unfortunately, DT has had a difficult time with it, and we welcome him back with open arms, and would give him all credit, tuition and academic, if he chooses to come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamm. Would you be able to, and I apologize for my ignorance on this piece, I know I read in the report that the school was trying to work through the debt forgiveness piece. Any updates that you can provide us on that?
Let me ask Hayward Howell. He's in the room with me. He's my director of financial services.
Hi there. Thank you, everyone, for taking your time. We processed the refund based on the adjusted calculation of his request for a third of the tuition to be adjusted. And that money was sent back, which ended up in approximately $3,700 of the $4,700 that was, or $3,900, I believe it is, out of the $4,700 being refunded, adjusted to his account and refunded back to his loans. And because that was done, the debt forgiveness piece that was produced during the same period was not processed because the full amount of the loan was not there. We had already refunded a portion of it. So that amount that we did refund of the $3,747 was not the entire $4,700, but we were doing that out of expediency for his request for us to make an adjustment on his account and not be charged for the entire period that he attended.
I don't know if that answered your question. Initially, based on his time of attendance, we did an initial calculation, and then after he requested a settlement, we reduced and adjusted his last date of attendance to reflect December of 19, and did our refund calculation based on that.
Okay. Mr. Blanchard, did you have something additional to add?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't. I did, but Mr. Howell, I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Okay. All right. Dr. Luck, I see you still have your hand up. I didn't know if you had additional questions for the institution that you'd like to cover. You are still on mute, Dr. Luck.
I couldn't find the right tab. No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Tharp, any questions?
No, I mean, I think it was easy to follow in the voluminous packet we received from both the school and the complainant. So no further questions at this point.
I do just have a couple more, Mr. Hamm, just trying to understand. It does seem as though you have a policy of review for ADA as it comes forward. It seems like information was requested. I just wanted to verify that that process was followed by the school, at least on record, that we could denote here in addition to what was provided in the documents.
Yes, of course. Ultimately, if we had substantiation of the medical condition and doctors' substantiation, we certainly would abide by a doctor's recommendations.
Okay, thank you for that. As I look through some of the additional questions I might have here, and in reviewing the complaint procedure, it would seem as though the student followed that procedure based on the communications we saw going back and forth. It would appear the school, based on the chronological records, was timely in responding back. Again, although I realize student and school may not be on the same page, in regards to the outcome of this matter. Again, the purpose of this board is to evaluate, did the school follow its procedures as documented through that? So just as a reminder to the institution and the student itself, that is what we will now move towards with board discussion. And also as a reminder, once we move into a motion of that nature, please do not interrupt us. Allow us to proceed forward with that for the purpose of the board. So Dr. Leck, Mr. Tharp, any additional discussion on this matter?
I don't have any. I just feel like the expectations of what the school could do during the time and not having any documentation submitted just kind of tied everybody's hands. So I don't have any further questions.
No further questions either. I echo that. I think it's an unfortunate situation, but knowing the federal requirements for ADA and what's required without, you know, and the fact that we can't just take somebody verbally telling us that they have ADA, that we do, that it is required to have documentation, I find it unfortunate, but no further questions.
Okay. All right. Would either of the board members like to make a motion at this point?
I motion that the complaint be dismissed with no finding against the institution. Dr. Leck.
Do I have a second on that?
Glenn, have a second.
Sorry, Mr. Tharp.
Glenn Tharp, second.
Okay. Ms. Kurtz, would you please take roll call?
Yes, sir. Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Thank you.
Okay. So at this time, the matter is concluded with the board at this point. We always encourage the institution and student to continue to partner together to try and find an amicable solution in the spirit of all that has gone on within our country at this point and the very difficult challenges that have occurred to individuals who have had many disruptions in their educational experience, as well as many institutions that have had to make significant adjustments in how they operate to try and fulfill their mission and their purpose. We appreciate the time of the student DT as well as the conservatory in this matter, and it is considered closed. So we will move to the next part of our agenda, which is a call to public. Please allow me just a moment to bring that piece up so I don't overstate. Okay, so we will move to a call to the public. Anyone wishing to make a public comment may come forward at this time. Please note that we may limit any presentation to that of 5 minutes. In addition, the committee may not discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on any item that is not appearing on the agenda. In addition, as a reminder, as we have reviewed certain things on our agenda already today and had motions against them, we do not have the ability, nor would we ask the public to try and bring those items back forward during this call to the public. So I will pause now to see if you would just raise your hand through the system and Ms. Kirsch can call you as appropriate. Okay, I am not seeing any hands raised at this point in time. So at this point, we will adjourn. I do not believe, I know I always go through this, I don't believe we need a motion to adjourn. We will adjourn the meeting at 2:12 on March.
I went to grievance procedure of the institution under jurisdiction. I have a complaint about that institution, particularly. I was wondering, how can I bring it forward?
Yes, you would contact the board staff.
Mr. Chair, can I interrupt? I'm sorry. Is this Toha? Is this the Amber Riddle issue?
Yes.
Yeah. You and I have been emailing and Mr. Lamont in the last 2 or 3 days. We just received your information and downloaded everything. We haven't opened a complaint yet. We have to review all the documentation to find if we have jurisdiction. We will continue to communicate with you on that as we move forward with this. So as of right now, there is no complaint that's in front of the complaint committee.
Great. And time for comment is over. Public comment is over. So
we do need to go.
So with that, we will adjourn at 2:13 on March 25th. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Good day. Bye, guys.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks, Kurt.